live and local,
across the city
and South Cambridgeshire.
This is Alex Elbrook.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
I'm really pleased to welcome back Dr. Mifanwi Hill, the 105 vet. Now, Mifanwi, we're going to talk about pet food today and what's the best thing to use, etc. Shall we start with dogs? Does it make much difference in what we feed them?
Absolutely, Alex. So feeding in general, so what we choose to feed our pets, can be as simple or as complicated as we want to make it. And the thing to remember when we're choosing a feed or any nutritional product for our pets is that they are as diverse as we are, but that each individual species is a bit different from humans. So dogs are what we would call omnivores. So they're very similar to people in that they need protein and fats and carbohydrates in their diet. And they can have quite a lot of kind of plant matter, so vegetable proteins and things like that in their diets, but they will need some meat as well. Cats, on the other hand, are what we call obligate carnivores. So cats can't have too much plant material in their diet. They do have to have some meat. But coming back to dogs, for most people, the simple decision is going to be, you know, what brand of pet food they want to feed, whether they want to feed a wet or a dry diet. And very simply, you know, if your pet is kind of happy on whatever you've been feeding it in the past, then these are pretty straightforward, pretty simple decisions. And it's really about making the decision based on maybe their dietary preferences. So do they prefer chicken or do they prefer beef? Do they like to have some carrots added in or do they like to have broccoli added in? You know, pretty straightforward. And one of the things to remember is that wet food and dry food are often very similar in their formulation. So a wet canned food, for example, is usually exactly the same composition as a dry food. It's just the dry food has been dehydrated.
I didn't realise that.
Yeah, so it's very common to not realise.
Yeah, no.
And you can make a dry food into a wet food by just adding some water to it, and, you know, often like pouring over some boiled water, for example, and then letting it cool down, and that will make a wet diet very easily. Something that people get very hung up about when they're sort of reading through the ingredients lists on pet foods is something called ash. And ash is a kind of technical term for the dry constituents or the leftover constituents when you do a calorie test on some food. A lot of people will read the ash on the ingredients list or on the components and they'll think, oh, they're adding ash to this animal's food. And that's not the case. And one of the easy pitfalls that some fancy, very expensive brands will kind of lure you down a path to say, oh, well, you know, they put all of this stuff into cheaper foods and it all gets bunched under this heading of ash. And that's not quite accurate. So if you're looking for a good quality pet food, really what you want to do is to look at the percentage of protein that the food has got, and you want to check what the source of that protein is and whether it's a mixed source or a single source. And it doesn't matter whether it's a mixed source or a single source, but it's a good idea for you to know, because sometimes pets can develop allergies to a particular component of their food. And if you've got lots of different components in a food, it can be very difficult to work out what bit of it is that they're allergic to. So look to compare the actual protein content, and the amount of protein that you feed your pet will actually depend on their life stage. So if they're a puppy, if they're an adult, or if they're a bit older. And it will also depend on how much exercise they do. So, you know, they don't necessarily need lots and lots of protein if they're not a super active pet. But if they're like a working dog, for example, they might need a higher protein diet. But just having a look at those numbers allows you to compare between, you know, one brand and another to find out what's actually ideal for your pet. And cost is not necessarily the main factor that's going to tell you whether or not a food is a good quality food or a bad quality food.
So when you talk about protein, can that be like a vegetarian diet for dogs? You said about cats not having plant matter. Could dogs, say, have cheese, or is that not a good idea? Or lentils, I don't know. But some people that would like to feed their animals a more vegetarian diet, was that not actually right for the animals?
So there are a couple of different ways to offer dogs a vegetarian diet. If you're looking to do a vegetarian diet for your dog, I'd recommend that you start off with a pre-formulated one. It's obviously possible to make kind of home-cooked meals for your dogs, but it's very hard to get it perfectly nutritionally balanced because the number of minerals and salts and things that dogs require are a bit different to what humans require. And so you can find yourself actually with, you know, hundreds of tubs of supplements in order to actually get a nutritionally balanced diet. And the thing to remember with all commercially available pet food is that it has to be quality controlled and it has to be formulated at least with the advice of a vet on board. So if you do want to go down the vegetarian route, then I'd certainly recommend, at least to begin with, going down the route of having a commercially prepared vegetarian diet. And actually, there are some really interesting diets coming online at the moment that use, for example, insect protein as a source of protein for the food. And these are actually considered to be pretty green in terms of, you know, the environmental impact that these foods have for feeding the pets. So if you're trying to either go for a vegetarian diet for your dog, or you're thinking about how you can reduce the carbon footprint of your pet food, then looking into some of the insect-based diets can be a really good alternative. As I say, it's really important that we don't go down the vegetarian or the vegan route with our cats, though, because cats are obligate carnivores. They actually have a requirement for a particular amino acid called taurine. And without taurine in their diet, they can get pretty severe cardiovascular problems, so heart health problems. And although you can make synthetic versions of a number of amino acids, the cats can't actually access them as easily. So you need far higher amounts of them in order for the cat to be able to get all of the different nutrition that they need. So cats really do need to be on a meat-based diet.
Well, that's good to know. And what other differences are there? You said about the dry and wet food. Is that the same thing for cats as with dogs?
Yeah, absolutely. So cat food, very much like dog food. So, you know, the wet food and the dry food will be very similar in terms of their composition. And something else to bear in mind when you're picking a pet food, whether it's for your dog or your cat, is also their life stage. So lots of people will think of kind of puppy foods as being, you know, high calorie foods that are going to support lots of rapid growth in puppies. But for certain breeds, particularly for larger breeds, so maybe the Great Danes and the Dobermans, the Rottweilers, these kinds of dogs, actually, giving them too many calories and giving them too much protein early on in their development can cause their bones to grow too rapidly. And we could actually see long-term skeletal problems with the bones if they grow too quickly in early life. So it's very important that you think about a life stage diet. Now, that could be a commercially prepared life stage diet, or it might just be thinking about maybe reducing the calories that you're offering to your pet on a day-to-day basis. So giving them a smaller portion, and maybe substituting some of the volume with a nice little snack of, say, raw carrot or broccoli, something along those lines for a dog, or for a cat, maybe switching them onto a lower calorie diet.
But I guess with all of those, you need to get advice on how much calories. Obviously, a bit like with humans, you can't just say, well, I'm just going to cut half their meal out.
Yeah, and they'll get hungry. You know, like us, if you suddenly put yourself on a kind of 50% ration, you'd be grumpy, you'd be unhappy about that. So we need to still give them that sensation of being full. And you can do that in a number of different ways, as I say. But yes, absolutely do that in consultation with your vet or with your veterinary nurse, because, you know, veterinary nurses do an awful lot of advice giving on this kind of subject. There's one more thing to sort of briefly cover, and that's home-cooked diets. And there are a number of advantages and disadvantages to home-cooked diets. So lots of people will feel that, you know, the kind of brown kibble that we commonly feed our pets doesn't look very appetizing, maybe it's a bit boring, and that's fair enough. And if you think that your pet might prefer a little bit of variety, then trying home-cooked food can be, you know, a perfectly good route to go down. But I think it's important to do it alongside the advice of a nutritionist, as I say, because you can end up with lots of supplements that you need to add. And to remember that there's a big difference between a home-cooked diet and a raw diet. And raw diets are becoming increasingly fashionable at the moment. And a lot of people are, you know, very staunch advocates of them. And there are a lot of people who are very against them. I sit a little bit on the fence. I think there is no inherent reason why a raw diet necessarily has to be bad if it's done well. But if you wouldn't eat something raw, then I would suggest that you don't feed it to your pet raw, because especially things like chicken, which we know carry quite high levels of salmonella, it can be very tricky to handle that safely in your kitchen and be feeding your pets raw food without risking contaminating either your own kitchen or your pet having a kind of low background level of salmonella infection or something like that. So there are commercially available raw diets, and again, they have to be tested and formulated, so they are probably much safer and much easier to handle than doing a home-cooked raw diet. But I think probably one of the main benefits that people find when they switch to a raw diet is that they are feeding a greater variety of food products. So these raw diets will often contain some meat, they will contain some fish, they'll contain some vegetables and grains and things like that. And actually, if you cooked that same meal, you may find that you get the same benefits to your pet. But if you are going down that route of either doing raw feeding or home cooked diets, I think it's really helpful to do that in consultation with a nutritionist. And there are lots of veterinary nutritionists out there. Obviously, you can also speak to a veterinary surgeon or your veterinary nurse, but go to get some independent advice if you are going to go down that slightly more complicated route.
That's lovely. That sounds all very good and actually makes me feel quite hungry. So, which is very sad, isn't it? I know. Thank you very much, Mifani. Again, that very interesting topic. And you're we'll see welcome. You again next month.
Yeah, absolutely. See you then.
Cambridge 105 Radio.